Oh,
they're not really sinking. They're low, but that's not a sinking ship, is it? It's fast.
That's a fast sinking ship.
Fast.
Just like the Titanic.
Titanic.
There's a high train. You know what train that is?
That's a flying train.
That's the 420 Express.
420 Express.
The high train.
High train.
I'm slapping my forehead. You can't hear it, but.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2.
Return to sender. Return to sender.
Welcome to Stamps You're Here Today, podcast number 4. I'm here with Scott, Cash, Tom, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today or on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Let's talk about stamps. We got some updates since the last episode. I guess there's been a stamp show since.
You bet. Cash, what'd you find?
I got the marijuana stamps that I was talking about in the last podcast. I got a set of first issues, Mint Never Hinged, and Jeff just told me that when one was measured for grading, it actually got a rating of 420, which that is interesting.
Cannot make that up.
For our stamp collector friends who are not potheads, why don't you explain what 420 is?
420, there's 420 is the normal story that it's a police call for marijuana possession. It actually isn't. It's actually for juvenile disturbances. But in California, in Los Angeles, 420 is related to marijuana usage.
Okay. In this episode, we're also going to talk about the two missing 24-cent inverted Jenny stamps, a 60-year-old mystery, and the reward, scenic American landscapes, gearing up for SESCAL, and for more advanced listeners, the history of grading. So let's start with the Jenny C3A. Instead of a regular segment of Today in History, we're going to do History Today. We're going to be revisiting the old history, the cold case of the McCoy 24-cent inverted Jennies, position 66 and 76, is being reopened by the issuing of a $50,000 reward per stamp or a $100,000 reward by Mystic's owner, Donald Sundman. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
Okay. The Philatelic Research Library is also offering a $10,000, this is a lot of dollars here, for information leading to the recovery. You may have seen this case in service and news recently, as it was covered in the LA Times, Fox News, Linz, and the New York Times, and many more. So let's revisit the cold case facts. Scott's going to tell us a little bit about that history.
Okay, on September 23rd, 1955, the American Philatelic Society stamp show in Norfolk, Virginia, a block of four that was on display mysteriously disappeared without a trace.
Position 75 resurfaced twice and had been altered to hide the guideline. Position 65 was found 3 weeks later. So what kind of altering was done to that stamp?
Well, you can, I believe they trimmed off some perforations to make it look like a straight edge. And it has since been reperforated again so that it is now appears fully perforated. But that's going to make the stamp look small.
So what does that do to the value?
Well, it would lower the value quite a bit, but it's still an inverted Jenny.
Still has a good story. It has a better story.
Well, yeah, it's got a, and if you can find out where it's been for the last 50 years, that would make it an even better story.
So how can it, the missing two, be identified now? What?
Well, first of all, before the sheet was broken up, there were numbers penciled on the back of each stamp. And if the stamp has original gum, even if the number's been erased, we can still see the number with certain equipment. If the gum has been soaked off, that would make it a little harder, but we do have images of the stamp that we can compare it to, and you can tell by the centering, the perforations, where you can use all of that information to determine that the stamp is genuine from that position.
Well, three of the sides are still probably normal. One side was heavily doctored.
Well, you hope three of the sides are normal.
Yeah. Otherwise, that would be a micro mini stamp.
Yes.
So if you see any C3As that are just like zero margins, you have to look at these two positions.
That's terrible. They're just destroying history to make a couple bucks.
No, I don't think that's anything new.
There are a lot of fakes that have been made of the inverted Jenny. Some of them have been with no ill intent involved. Some people just want to fill space in their album, so they get creative. And when the collection passes to somebody else, the next person may not know, and they think they've got this really rare stamp, so they send it in and to get a certificate, and the certificate comes back and says that it's fake or something like that. And so from an expertizing point of view, when you expertize, when you look at something like that, you have to do a little bit of the research to find out where it is, where it's been, what it could be made out, how it could be made. You have to understand all of those things when you go into an expertizing situation like that.
Why don't you tell them what a fake C3A generally looks like?
Well, there's a number of different ones. The ones that you see now have been made usually on a computer with a printer. Some of them are higher quality. Some of them are not, but some of them are printed on gummed paper and perforated, and that can be... It makes them look good, but those are generally not high enough quality to fool anybody who's handled a genuine one. You're looking at the method of printing. The original stamps were printed by line engraved printing or intaglio printing, and that is difficult thing to fake, especially with a computer printer and a printer. But there are some fakes that were engraved. Mostly they were made in Europe quite a few years ago. But a lot of those also have cancels on them. Now, first of all, none of the Jennies are known used. These two that are missing could possibly have been used to hide their genuineness. But I don't know. That would generally destroy the value. The used ones that came out of Europe, the paper is different from the originals. It's a completely different type of paper, even though the image is engraved.
If you find a C3A that's used, it really doesn't matter what the paper is. It's fake.
Right. I mean, pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. I've also seen items where somebody who with a lot of patience has taken a regular C3 Jenny and sanded or braided the airplane out of the middle and created a little... depression in the stamp paper, and then they've taken another stamp and they've shaved out the Jenny and glued it in upside down. I see those every once in a while. Some of them can be extremely convincing, but again, you're talking about altering the surface of the paper and altering the integrity of the paper. You have to add some sort of adhesive to get the two pieces to stick together. And all of these things can be detected. So are they difficult to expertise? Not really. Are they difficult if you've don't have the right equipment, they can be. They can be very convincing at times.
Well, to bring up the Book of Secrets, we have a picture of a C3A that came in, which, in my opinion, was the best fake C3A I had seen.
I remember that one.
It was still, you could still tell it was fake, but the craftsmanship, the time that they put into making this fake stamp was obviously very, very high. They did a really, really nice job of creating a fake stamp. And that's why we put it in the book.
It's like the Rolls Royce of fake.
There you go.
Jenny.
Yeah.
So why do you guys think it took 60 years to bring this investigation around?
Well, I don't think that it's taken 60 years to bring it around. I think that the investigation has always been open. It's just been on the back burner because there aren't any people pushing for it to be resolved. There are no current good leads. And it's really difficult. I mean, when you get a stamp and as a stamp collector and you stick it in your album, 30 years goes by and it's still in your album. There's not a lot of information out there that you can tell that the stamp is out there.
I don't think there's a whole lot of C3As that are sitting in people's albums that the person who put it there didn't realize they were putting, you know, a $100,000 stamp in.
Well, you were talking about why does an art thief steal art? Yeah. It's so he can sell it. Well, if the person that buys it doesn't turn around and sell it, and they don't display it publicly...
ever.
Then there's no real new leads that come up because people don't realize that it's there. So as long as he's careful about not bragging about it,
yep.
Who else is going to know?
It's interesting that, you know, the Mystic Stamp Company put up the reward today. Or
this week or last week, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably, you know, it has to do with the $2. You know, there's getting a lot of publicity.
It could.
So, I don't fault them for going for the publicity. That's a smart thing.
Well, if it actually makes or generates leads and they're able to recover one or both of these stamps, then it's worth it.
Well, and they managed to get all the current high-profile news agencies to pick it up. I mean, New York Times, LA Times.
Yeah.
That gets it out to a lot of people not necessarily familiar with stamps or stamp collecting at all, other than knowing that you lick it and stick it and put it on an envelope.
We don't even do that anymore. Yeah, peel it and stick it now.
Mm-hmm. Well, money talks, that's for sure. And the sale, if they could recover it, I guess, in her... McCoy left in her will that she didn't accept the full payout for the insurance. She just accepted part of it and said, well, if you guys find it, I want it back. And when she was later on in age, she left it to the American Philatelic Research Library in her will. So they could benefit a lot from having it in their collection or even selling it.
They would sell it.
Oh, yeah?
They would sell it, yes. The APS or the APRL already has a copy, and they displayed it at the Hartford APS show in August.
I'm sure the security was better that time.
Yeah, it'd be great to get some closure, too. Find out where it's been, who had it. Or is this kind of one of those, just drop it off at the FBI's doorstep and walk away, or...
Don't walk away if you want to collect $60,000 per stamp.
That's true. Yeah. You gotta tell them something. Okay, well, if you want to see or read more about this article, it's a really good article. We have a link to it on our Facebook and our Twitter feed. And we're calling anyone listening to aid in the worldwide recovery of these philatelic treasures. To anyone trying to offload them because of the renewed hot item status, they are still considered stolen property. Please do the right thing and return them to the APRL. Thank you in advance. Okay, Tom, I want to talk about the Scenic American Landscape Stamp Series. which apparently is not production anymore. I wrote down that it's production. It's not production, which is sad because it's a beautiful set.
Well, it is a really nice set. The Scenic American Landscapes are a set of airmail stamps that have been put out for several years. There's 18 in the set. And they were actually all, an interesting thing is they were all done by the Kessler Design Group. Ethel Kessler is a woman-led organization design group, and they actually put their first stamp out, was actually the first semi-postal stamp for breast cancer in 1998. And since then, they have done over 250 stamp designs, including the American Landscape series. So it's a neat set. They put it out to kind of when somebody from another country would get airmail from the United States showing off the beauty of some of the United States national parks and some of the other interesting areas around the U.S.
And their airmail stamps, which...
Well, they've been designated airmail stamps by the catalog because they have a little silver jet airplane depicted next to the denomination.
But of course... Yeah, and they actually don't say airmail on them.
Yeah.
They don't say airmail on them, but they do fulfill, in general, international rates to specific places. And I really think that the end of the series has come because, as we were discussing before the podcast, they have come out with the Global Forever stamps. I think we've had three of them now. And since these were intended for international rates, with a Global Forever stamp, you can use that to send to any other country. So I don't think we're going to see any more of the Scenic American Landscapes.
Well, and they didn't put one out last year, so.
True.
That does...
True.
Yeah, there isn't a new one in the 2014 catalog.
The series started in 2006, and the last entry was 2012?
Yes, last year. The year before.
So is this the end of airmail stamps as we know them?
Well,
could be.
Airmail, I think, is an antiquated term anyway, because, you know, if you send something from Los Angeles to San Francisco, it's going to go by airplane. And I don't think, you know, trucks are going to be delivering mail except extremely locally. So airmail used to mean something, and today it just doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll move on to UFO mail.
And there you go. But I do want to, we were discussing this also. There is a special 26 by 18 inch Yosemite National Park commemorative Gicle print.
Oh. It's a fine art print.
And I learned the word gicle. So now I'm going to work that in whenever I can do it.
And don't try to buy it and put on a package. I already tried.
Yeah.
It looks like a stamp, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The print.
Except it's 2 feet by 1.5 feet.
Yeah, the print measures 26 and 3/4 inch by 18 inches, so... Good luck fitting that on a letter.
There you go. So over here, we're getting ready. We're gearing up for SESCAL, and it's shameless plug time. I know everyone has been wondering, will we be at SESCAL? The answer is the sky blue? Ha ha ha.
And as a note, we will not have a gicle printed anything.
There you go. There'll be a seminar we'll be hosting on October 19th, which I believe is the last day.
Sunday.
Yes, Sunday.
Sunday at 2 p.m. in Newport, Room C. That sounds fancy.
That is fancy. SESCAL is at the Los Angeles LAX Hilton Hotel, for those of you who don't live in Southern California.
The second worst venue of a stamp show I've seen. The first worst being every place else.
So we're going to be hosting a seminar on expertizing, detecting, reperforating, and regumming, and grading. Experts will be available to review, give opinion on your stamps. Attendees receive a free, F-R-E-E, copy of the coveted Philatelic Book of Secrets, a $10 value, and will be there from 2 to 4 p.m.
And the Book of Secrets was not printed via Giclée.
There we go.
See, now we got to get a Giclée just for your office. There.
You guys are lucky the podcast ends. I'm going to have to hear this for the next week.
There you go. Okay, so enough shameless plugging. Let's talk about the history of grading. What is grading?
Jeff, tell us about grading, since you're new to it. If you can explain it, it's easy enough for anybody.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Scholarly cap. Oh, boy. What grading is to me is the proper identification and classification of a stamp that takes into consideration aspects including whether or not it is used or new.
Let me stop you there. That is not grading.
Uh-oh. Oh.
Nope.
That is expertization. Grading. Grading would be how... What condition what value grading relates to value, and the better a stamp would grade would correlate to being worth more. So things that affect grading are condition, certainly,
mm-hmm.
and centering, and we define centering as how well the vignette of the stamp is centered within the perforations. And then condition refers to, is it fresh and undamaged as it came from the post office, or does it have fingerprints on the gum, small creases, tears, anything that can damage the stamp would be considered something that affects condition and would therefore lower the value of the stamp, therefore would lower the grade. So grading is really a summary of the condition of the stamp relating to value.
Well put.
So old way of grading was fine, very fine. So
and it was very subjective, and it would vary from dealer to dealer. One dealer's very fine stamp might be another dealer's fine stamp and the third dealer's extra fine stamp. And without a consistent grading for each dealer, it's very confusing for a collector who says, okay, I can afford to collect stamps in the grade of very fine. But they go to each dealer and very fine means a different thing. And that's the way they've priced their material.
You buy four different stamps in very fine and put them together, and you're like, well, these don't look the same.
Exactly.
I've seen that even on eBay. I'm going, how is that very fine? Are you kidding?
Well, the other thing, too, is that a lot of dealers, when they would talk about very fine or fine or whatever, they would speak about only the centering.
Well, not
and
only
the
that.
Stamp would have a thin, and right. you'd say, this is a faulty very fine. Well, if it's a faulty very fine, it's not very fine.
Well, not only that, some dealers would talk about it's very fine for the issue, which is tough. If you're a beginning collector, you don't know from one issue to the next which ones have big margins, which ones come well-centered. You don't know any of that. You have to trust the dealer. And if they're basing their grading... If they have a very fine in an older stamp, and it looks one way, and then you go 30 or 40 years further down, and they have a same stamp, and they say it's very fine, and they don't look at the centering on those two, don't even look anything alike, because he's graded by issue, and that just it's very confusing, and it's very difficult to get a hold of. And there's a long learning process in that. So,
well, that's I think, like some of the people look at it as, you know, an 85 or, you know, fine, very fine, extra fine stamp is the best you're going to find, the best grade you're going to find for that stamp. That does not make that stamp a 100. It does not make it a gem.
Mm-hmm.
It's still only an 85.
A very fine, very fine to extra fine.
Very fine to extra fine.
Now, that kind of leads into Jessica's, on the list, Jessica's next question is, how did grading start? And that's really why it started, is so that it would kind of level the playing field across all the different dealers and commercial stores and things like that that sell stamps. It would give a common language. When you say very fine, now most dealers who deal in U.S. stamps are aware of PSE's grading system. And when you say, I want a very fine stamp, they think of the standards that PSE has set in their definition of very fine. And then that's how the stamps should look. And so if with a little bit of reading, and I believe it's presented in the Philatelic Book of Secrets as well, it defines each of the different grades that PSE uses. And if you...
Well, the PF uses it also. So
right. Right.
I mean, but everybody, PSE, PSAG uses it.
PSE is the one that started right. it, but it's become a common language throughout the hobby now, because not only does PSE use that, the Philatelic Foundation uses it, and the other grading services also use it, and most dealers use it now, and it has brought a standard level of description to the hobby that was missing, and made it much fairer for a beginning collector to enter the hobby and find a stamp for a fair price.
What I found was that, and this, you know, I've been dealing with grading for 20 years or 15 years, and nobody owned a definition of very fine. There wasn't a ownership, like a consensus. When PSE and PF and PSAG, they all adopted the 85 as very fine. Well, you could own 85. There was a consensus of an 85. There was a definition of an 85. And so when you started using numerical grades, you started getting more exact as to what the stamp was, so that you can say, you know, I have a very fine stamp with a thin, and you have a fine stamp that doesn't have a thin. Which one is better? Well, if you say, I have an 85 and you have a 75, you know which one is better.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I see in exhibiting all the time is the people will exhibit the finest known example of whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get those stamps graded, and they find out those stamps that they thought were the finest known aren't the finest known anymore. They might be the finest centered. You know, it might be the prettiest one if you don't look at the back. Or if you don't mind that tear in the corner, it is really, truly the greatest one ever made, except that it's faulty.
It looks prettiest from the front.
Exactly. So grading is not the prettiest. Grading is an actual numerical calculation. And I hate to bring up the analogy of coins, because coins and stamps are different. But in the coin world, you have the exact same thing, where you have a grade 65 coin and a grade 64 coin and a grade 63 coin, and you know which ones are better. They don't say, this one is uncirculated and it's got a scuff. They say, give it a number. And so when you get a number, and the values in coins as well as stamps, a stamp in... Look at Stanley Gibbons. They don't do grading.
Mm-hmm.
but they still say that an XF coin, an extra fine, or I'm sorry, stamp, and an extra fine stamp versus a very fine stamp is double the price. They put a 100% markup on it.
Brookman does the same thing. They sell fine stamps and they have very fine stamps. They have a little percentage modifier. Yep. If you, because both of those companies actually sell the stamps in their catalogs. And if you want to order a stamp from them, they charge that premium if you want a nicer stamp.
And then Unitrade does the same thing with Canada, where it says, this condition is this price, this condition is this price. Well, the hitch is, if you are a dealer and you have your choice and you have a stamp in front of you and you have your choice of selling that stamp for $5 or $25, there's going to be an incentive for you to price it at $25. If there's another person who says the $5 is for a fine stamp in grade of 80 and you're trying to get an extra fine grade of 90 price, all of a sudden you have a way of speaking with the dealer saying this stamp is not that price. Furthermore, if you're a knowledgeable person, well, even if you're a beginner, you can say to the person, I don't know anything about stamps. I don't know anything about grading. But I do know that 90 is a bigger number than 80. And therefore, I should be modifying my price because I don't know how much 10 numbers are worth. But I know that there's got to be some difference in value.
I got to say, I got to attest to that personally, actually. I bought a stamp a few months ago trying to collect some classic US from a dealer. And it's the most expensive stamp I've ever gotten. I paid $600 for it. And it wasn't graded. And I should have known better because we were sitting there trying to argue back and forth about price. And it was that same subjective problem. I was new. I've never tried to purchase a stamp that is that traditionally expensive before. And so we haggled over the price for an hour. It came down to we both, quote, thought $600 was fair. And then I get it back and, okay, if it's going to be graded, it's really going to be worth, you know, $450, $500. Well, crap.
Wait. You bought what?
Uh-oh. You paid how much?
What was the stamp, by the way? Just curious.
It was a mint no gum 1 cent Franklin from the first pictorial issue, I think. I can't remember the Scott number.
So check 112 out.
Or 111.
112. One of those, yeah.
Check eBay for, what was that, 112, 111. Soon to be listed.
But, you know, had I gone after that in a grade, I would have known better. I could have, and I do, I've done it since. I've learned how to do it. I whip out my SMQ and go, that's not worth that. No way. And it literally, it takes seconds. It will take 30 seconds to come to a decision versus an hour of haggling over who's right.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect example of what was going on in the last Anaheim Stamp Show. Steve Petillo is the person who has the, who gave us the name of for this podcast, but there was a very knowledgeable dealer who was dealing with a knowledgeable other dealer, and they knew what the prices of things should be, and they couldn't quite agree on it, but, you know, they knew, they had the knowledge, but they had been in the business, you know, one of them had been in the business for 20 years, and the other one I know had been in for at least 5. If you haven't been in the business for that long, you don't have the ability to say, oh, wow, that mm-hmm. stamp. And you open up the Scott catalog, and it only gives you one number.
Yep.
And the no gum, you know, might have had a $1,000 catalog value. But you go, well, is the, you know, people sell things for percentages of catalog all the time, both up and down. You could get a stamp for one-third of catalog, or you can get a stamp for 3 times catalog. And it's very, very difficult without some sort of a guide. And that's kind of what grading does.
You know, what's really frustrating is I order the Kenmore catalog. And you can either buy mint or used. I don't say if the mint is hinged, currently hinged, you know, ripped in half. It's mint. You're buying a mint stamp. And you don't know what you're going to get in the mail. It's just kind of a surprise in the mail.
Yeah, but luckily Kenmore has a very good return policy.
Oh, that's
And
true.
That's an important thing for when you deal with these is, you know, they send you the stamps and you look at it and you go, yes, I'm willing to pay $25 for that stamp. And then you put it in your collection. And if you say no, they're wrong. The stamp has, you know, a thin. You send it on back and they go, no problem. I mean, that's...
I dealt with Kenmore when I was a very, very newbie collector. And I remember I requested an airmail stamp from them at one point, and I wanted to collect used. And they didn't have any used, so they sent me a mint stamp and told me I could send it on a letter to myself and get it canceled.
That's great.
True.
True. But what? That doesn't make it used when it was supposed to have been used.
Genuine use.
They should have just stuck it on the outside of the envelope and sent you an empty envelope, and there's your used stamp. Soak it off.
Oh, yeah, by the way, here's your order. Did you get your envelope? Hope you didn't tear it.
Yeah, my favorite analogy for grading is, let's say you have carbon atoms, and a grade of 1 will be coal, and a grade of 10 will be diamonds. And it's just you have carbon, and it's just in different conditions. Yeah. And a stamp is the same way. You have a stamping grade of, actually doesn't go down to 1. Yeah, it goes to 5. So you have a grade of 5, which, you know, is a scrap of paper, which is that thing that you can put in your album.
It is a stamp, or it was a stamp.
Yeah, up to grade 100, which is, you know, among the finest known of the issue potentially, and a beautifully well-framed, well-centered stamp with no faults. So
that's one reason I like the two things at PSEstamp.com, actually, is the set registry and the population report. Because you can sit there, the set registry, you can be competitive with your stamps and actually see who has the best. And then the pop report and go, oh, I've got a 98. Two people have 100s. Now I've got something to beat. Well, so
that happened with C11. An actual exhibitor of U.S. number C11 had the finest known C11. And they sent it in. And it did indeed get a grade 100. I think 100. I don't think it got 100J. It got 100.
Wow.
And it was indeed the finest known. But now instead of him saying, I think this is the finest known, you go, well, pull it up on the computer. If you think you got one better, pull it up on the computer and take a look.
Now I know it's the finest
one.
Yep.
And
that's a tough one, too.
Well, that happens in coin collecting all the time. They have their population reports. And stamps, you know, PSE has population report, PF has population report. Every, you know, those are the two big companies that do expertizing and grading. But in stamp or coin collecting, you have 3 or 4, and you can look at it and say, I want the best of this, and I'm willing to pay 100 times catalog for this stamp. And they do. They pay 100-150 times catalog, or times, not percentage, 100 times catalog. They'll spend $1 million for a coin that catalogs 1,000.
That's crazy.
But it's the best known. It's the nicest one. And people look for that stuff. That's why I think that there's so much upside on graded stamps, is that people want quality.
Mm-hmm.
So
is there any investment opportunity with stamp collecting?
Well, we discussed this in the last one, but, you know, investing is always a bad thing to talk about, but graded stamps have really been the market in the United States. You know, you look at $100 stamps going for $2,000, $3,000, and that's driving the market because people do want really nice stamps in their collections. And when you have a lot of people competing for quality, they bid up the price.
Grading stamps are going to be just like stocks. They're going to go up and they're going to go down, and over time they will go up. But also at the same time, if you are collecting only the best known, the populations don't generally go down.
Yeah.
They go up as people find new, make new finds. So that can also affect the value of a stamp and bring it down because no, oh no, there's not only one now, there's two. Oh no, what's that going to do to the price?
Well, it's like, well, hey, I got a 100.
Generally, there are more than two people out there that want it, so the price is probably still going to be
it's
decently high.
And again, I know coins and stamps are not the same, but you have that happen with coins all the time. They find a nicer one. The second nicest one does not go up, down in value. In fact, it goes up in value. And the one that's nicer just ends up going for 10 times the value because people out there are smart. They always know that there's a possibility of a nicer one coming up. Very rarely does somebody say, oh my God, this isn't the best one known. Oh, let's crash the value. I mean, that just has not happened in the history of stamp collecting, even before grading. It's never happened, so. We'll see what happens, though, over the next 50 years. It took coin collecting 25 years to get massive, you know, multi-billion dollar industry.
Yeah, speaking of that, 25 years ago, when coin grading started, stamp collecting was bigger than coin collecting.
Yeah, yeah.
And now coin collecting is huge.
Yep.
Well, maybe in 25 years, we'll be bigger than coin collecting again.
Hopefully.
That would be great.
Everything goes in cycles, including collecting. Okay, so we're going to wrap that up on a high note. Yes, your stamps are beautiful.
Say that after they've been graded.
Yeah, there you go. Say that.
You can have the most beautiful stamp everywhere. I'll put a nice 100 next to it, and it, you know, you get that cert back, and it's the best thing ever.
Or if you can't, get a G Clay.
Yeah, there you go.
beat me to it.
Get the prints. So great. I'd like to, awesome.
Great. Now there's two of them.
Yeah. I'd like to give a little bump to our sponsor for this episode, the Philatelic Book of Secrets, which you can now see has been reviewed on Lens. It got some pretty good reviews, so find out for yourself why. And it's a whopping $10. Which is totally underpriced. Buy it for 10, sell it for 30. So on that note, y'all have a good day and keep collecting.